This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
I feel like the normal girl sort of visiting for a very long time in a not normal world and trying to bridge the two worlds together.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
You're a virgin who can't drive.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
Are you a man who once said death smiles at us all?
And need to talk about more.
I am a millionaire. Now y'all look money hungry, and that's good.
I'm Anna Sale. Imagine being in your late 20s, building a career as a backup singer, and you get summoned to audition for Mick Jagger. This is what happened to Lisa Fisher.
You know, I bring my tape, and Mick is sitting behind a desk, and he has the boombox, and he puts the tape in, and he's listening, and I'm kind of standing around, and I'm waiting to see what this is going to be, because there's no, I don't remember there being a piano or anyone there to play it or anything like that. So he's listening to the tape, and then he says, well, can you sing along with it? So I started singing along with it. I'm standing, I'm singing. He gets up from behind the desk, and he starts coming around to me and starts kind of moving around and dancing, and it's kind of not quite freaking me out, but kind of freaking me out because I didn't know what he was doing.
You're singing along to a boombox, and he starts
dancing
around you.
Right, exactly.
She got the job. Lisa's sung backup on every Rolling Stones tour since 1989. That wailing voice on stage during Gimme Shelter, that's her. This is from the Stones' 2004 album, Live Licks.
The full-on bra-slinging, beer-chugging, screaming and yelling and tits in the air kind of audience. And it's been interesting to watch this audience grow up and now bring their kids and their grandkids. Uh-huh. So it's just been insanely amazing.
But when the tours are over, Lisa comes home to a life that's not quite as glamorous.
Everything's a mess, sorry.
There are remnants of her rock star life, but they're stacked in a corner, as she told the makers of 20 Feet from Stardom, the Oscar-winning documentary about backup singers.
These are all gold albums I haven't put up yet. That's something from Tina Turner's tour that was a gift from her.
Lisa lives in Union City, New Jersey, which isn't far from the Brooklyn apartment building where she grew up.
A combination of a walk-up and an elevator building where I don't know if they ran out of money to, like, put the elevator on each floor, but it's like all the even floors didn't get the elevator exit and the odd floors got the elevator. So I was lucky enough to, you know, have the elevator on my floor.
She's the oldest of three with two younger brothers. All of them are very close in age.
When I do the math, I think my mom was pregnant with me at 15. And then my dad was a year older. And so, you know, by the time she was 19, she had three kids. And so, and they were still young and wanted to hang out and go out. Or they would have, you know, people over and have parties at the house and stuff. There was always laughter and always, you know, glasses with ice clicking and music.
What's the music you remember?
Motown, mostly.
Both Lisa's parents were singers. Her father sang backup for a doo-wop group called the Cupids. Was there enough money growing up? Did it feel like you had enough?
My dad, he didn't have his GED. And so I remember being in school and sitting at the kitchen table doing my homework. And my dad was also doing his homework. And I don't know if he ever passed the test or not. I just know that he ended up working for the Board of Ed and not being very happy there.
And when Lisa was around 14, he took off.
You know, after my dad left, we ended up, my mom was a single mom, and so we ended up being on welfare for a while. You know, I can still remember the taste of the powdered eggs that would come in this canister. And it had a different kind of flavor to it versus real eggs. So I was sort of getting used to that. You know, my mom had this thing. I think it got to a point where she wouldn't allow us into the refrigerator. It was like a thing in her house where, you know, you wouldn't go through the fridge because she had to be sure that there was enough food to last for the 2 weeks until my dad got paid again or until the 2 weeks when the welfare or the food stamps would come in.
It was stressful for Lisa's mom. She started drinking more, and then she began having seizures.
The first time that it happened, she was on the phone. I was in my room doing my homework, and the phone is in the hallway. I just hear, blam! And I come out, and my mom is laying in a pool of blood from her head, and she starts to convulse, and I had never seen anything like this before. And so I call 911 and I tell them, you know, what's going on. And then the ambulance came for her and took her to the hospital.
Her mother was put on anti-seizure medication and she wasn't supposed to drink alcohol while taking it. Lisa says her mother did anyway.
I was at my teacher's house when I got the call that she just passed away. So when I came home, they just said that she had a seizure. And she didn't wake up.
And how old were you when your mother passed away?
17. Yeah.
So you were nearing the end of school, trying to figure out what the next step was.
Yeah.
You have these two younger brothers.
Yeah. It's interesting. Luckily, my mom had an amazing sister who is kind of like my mother now, you know, our mother now, really. We call her auntie. My mom was like, want to get married, have my babies, homemaker, good wife, good mother, that's all I want, I'm good. My aunt, on the other hand, was like, I need a job, I need to work, I need to make my own money, I need to make my own way. It's like when I looked at my aunt, she was, I almost felt more like her daughter in just my desire to break free and get out of the house and make my own money. So I kind of just gravitated more to watching how she lived her life, you know?
Lisa got a scholarship to study opera at Queens College. It covered tuition.
And I was like, oh, this is so great, teaching me just this whole new world of melodies and language. And just, it was just lovely for me. But I still needed to get to Queens. And I, you know, I still needed to eat lunch and things like that. So, you know, I was just trying to figure out how I was going to live. And I just got exhausted from, you know, trying to do these jobs and trying to study in between and the travel and just all that stuff. It just wore me down. And my mom had just passed and I was still like, bleh. So I ended up leaving Queens College. And so I started working like little clubs up in the Bronx where they would, you know, it'd be late hour joints and, you know, you'd do like 3 to 5 sets a night and you might get paid $30. But if you get like maybe 4 or 5 of those a week, you're good to go, you know.
Then Lisa met Luther Vandross. She toured with him beginning in 1983 when Lisa was 24 until Luther's death in 2005. This is their 1996 duet, Whether or Not the World Gets Better. Coming up, what Lisa wishes she'd learned about money on those global rock and roll tours. And not from Mick or Keith or Luther.
Usually the crew people will have it on point. And like somebody told me a great story about, they would take their per diem, save their per diem, and buy gold coins and ended up able to get a down payment for a really nice house.
So, our episode about cheating, it hit a nerve. Some of you sent in more stories about cheating. I heard from several gay men who I didn't hear from the first time around. I was surprised when you said that no gay men wrote in, wrote a listener named Mark. I had an affair with a married man about 10 years ago. I never had any intention of ever making a move. He was the one who started it. One story from our cheating episode drew the most response, and it was divided. I talked with a woman I called Sherry, which is not her real name. She cheated on her husband, fessed up, and then renegotiated the terms of their marriage. A listener named Jared wrote, she has used sex as a weapon and it's completely wrong. It's hard to listen to a cheater with little to no remorse, wrote another listener named Elizabeth. Sherry herself wrote in with an email responding to the episode. Anna, I'm sorry the whole topic gave you a stomachache, she wrote. You are worried about your moral compass shifting? It will. You will be asked to give up every part of yourself, body, soul, and spirit, and do it willingly and with a smile. And you will get lost. My advice to you is to find a way to keep a piece of yourself. I also talked about Sherry with sex columnist Dan Savage on his podcast, Savage Lovecast. I ran Sherry's lingering question past him about whether it was emotional blackmail for her to tell her husband she'd only stay in the marriage she could have an occasional fling.
I would say question it, but I would also say you can take yes for an answer. And she got yes for an answer, but I think she should be considerate of his feelings and she should check in with him and continue to check in with him. If what they really both put the primary importance is the survival of the marriage, they should constantly be checking in with each other.
Take yes for an answer and keep being honest with each other. That's good advice. On the next episode, doctor and actor Ken Jeong. After years of practicing medicine, his comedy breakout came when he played an Asian mobster in The Hangover. But while he was filming that role, his wife was being treated for stage 3 breast cancer.
I did everything in my power to actually think like a doctor and to think clinically. I mean, just for strength, you know, because obviously I was emotional. So to calm me down, I had to, you know, be in doctor mode.
I want to tell you about another podcast from WNYC that you should check out, On the Media. It's a show that explores how journalism works and why it works that way. After you consume the news, listen to On the Media. Hosts Brooke Gladstone and Bob Garfield will make you smarter about it. Look for On the Media wherever you get your podcast or find it on the WNYC app. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. By the time she was 32, Lisa Fisher's career was humming. She'd been working with Luther Vandross for nearly a decade and now had a solo album. She was a backup singer, breaking through.
You've done your time, you've paid your dues,
yeah,
and now...
Paid her dues.
This is from Live with Regis and Kathy Lee. They wanted to know about touring with the Rolling Stones.
So what was it like working with them?
Exciting. It was the first time I was on a private plane. They had beds on the plane.
I bet they did.
Ooh, Oh, no, you're kidding!
Stop! Will you stop?
Lisa's single, How Can I Ease the Pain, hit number one on the R&B charts. And then she won a Grammy.
How Can I Ease the Pain, Lisa Fisher. It's a tie. Patti and Lisa Fisher, How Can I Ease the Pain?
It was a tie with Patti LaBelle. And Lisa had sung backup on Patti's winning song.
There's so many people to thank. There's so many people to thank. Oh, God. All the people.
Like, your life explodes. How do you remember that time?
It's so funny when you say explodes. I just feel like, you know, I look at every task that I have to do, like a list, and I tick them off and then I keep moving. You know, I would go from gig to gig to gig to gig. Getting a record deal was a gift from heaven, from Luther. You know, Luther believed that I could, and I'd been doing all these demos, and I didn't really know what being an artist would mean. I never really knew what I was. Mm. I felt like there was the glass slipper, and I had to be able to fit into every single glass slipper there was in order to keep working.
But that impulse ended up hurting Lisa's solo career. Her record company couldn't figure out what to do with her, she says, because she liked everything. She lost her deal, and then she thought she had another one, and that fell through too.
I'm in my early 30s, and trying to get me a deal after all this has happened felt like we were begging someone to do us a favor. You know, and I was just like, I don't like the energy of this. This is not what the music is supposed to be about. I kind of stepped back into what I felt good about doing.
That was singing with someone else in the spotlight. She's backed up Dolly Parton, Beyonce, Lou Reed, and Bobby McFerrin, and toured with Tina Turner, Nine Inch Nails, and the Rolling Stones as recently as last fall. Lisa told the New York Times in 2013 that I reject the notion that the job you excel at is somehow not enough to aspire to, that there has to be something more. But there is still the money question.
So now it's at the point where, you know, I'm in my 50s, 40s and 50s, and I'm starting to think like, okay, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to, you know, feed myself? How am I going to be okay and not, you know, have cat food at 80.
Is that a concern after touring with the Rolling Stones and having a relationship with them for 25 years? Do you not feel financially secure?
It is, and it really isn't casting any shadows on how they practice their business. It's really more a statement about music. And I'll speak for myself. All the things that I did not join together as a thought. Like, so, you know, when you think about a regular job, you know, there's a fund and there's a retirement thing and there's insurance and blah, 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 and there's a health thing, blah. You know, as a singer, I wasn't thinking that way. You know, you're staying at all these great hotels and, you know, everybody's like spending money like water and, you know, you're buying the caviar for breakfast and the yada, yada, because you can. And it's just so new and it's just so cool and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm looking like, you know, that was stupid. That was really dumb. That literally went down the toilet. when I think about the money that I have gone through, I have to laugh to myself. You know, so I wasn't thinking creatively about money. And it's really almost life and death to think about money in creative ways, you know. So, yeah, I think about things differently now. I don't have the credit card at Neiman Marcus anymore. Or I don't have, you know, I have maybe literally two credit cards. And one is for business and one's for personal. And the other one's just my little ATM card. And I just, you know, I don't like to look at how much I have because it's never enough.
And that's a strange feeling for a woman who's wanted to work and earn her own money since she was a kid.
You know, me finding a paper route or working at the local supermarket, making some money was such a great feeling for me. And it's so odd because I realized for me, I was talking to a therapist about this a while back, that my mother's rule about not going in the refrigerator, the first thing that I did was fill the refrigerator with food and things that I wanted to have because I bought it, you know. So that feeling of being independent was just so powerful on one end, but I also realized that that was sort of leading into a food and eating disorder for me as well.
When did you confront your eating disorder?
Confront's an interesting word. I think most seriously, probably in the last 4 years. I'm not throwing up anymore, which is great. I have moments when I still overeat, but I'm also, it's like I just want to be healthy about my choices and not beat my own butt about when I have a moment when it's not the best choice. And to really get down to understanding the word loving myself. You know, everyone's dealing with something, and it's the act of losing is something that I feel that we aren't taught how to feel about that kind of thing. You just feel how you feel and you learn your survival techniques however you learn them.
When you come home from touring for months on end, you've never married, you don't have children.
No.
What's nice about finally being alone?
Some days I wonder if there is something nice about it. It's a fiasco at my house. It looks like a transient woman with suitcases has exploded in my apartment. But, yeah, it's weird going on tour for 6 months or 3 months or whatever the time is and then coming home. And there's spider webs and there's, you know, stuff growing in your fridge. But when I get home, I sort of feel like I can breathe. I don't have the weight of feeling like I'm going to fail at something. You know, I don't feel like, I feel a lightness. And so I get home and I'm happy and I sit and I tape, and this is really stupid, but this is one of the things I love to do. I will tape all the, Judge Judy, things. And when I get home, I'm like, I'll sit and I'll watch all the, you know, episodes that I've missed. And my aunt and I just talk on the phone. Did you see what she said? You're an idiot. Yes, we have a great time. So it's like, it normalizes me. Yeah. It normalizes me. And, yeah. I can't believe I just said that.
Singer Lisa Fisher. She's touring American cities throughout this spring. Dates are at lisafishermusic.com. And we have videos of Lisa singing with the Stones, with Luther Vandross, and on her own posted on our website. Hearing Lisa's story sent me straight to the internet to look at my bank account and how much money I'm spending versus saving. Go ahead. You can give your money situation a close look, too. But then come to deathsexmoney.org and soothe yourself with the pure beauty of the human voice. Death, Sex, and Money is a production of WNYC. The team includes Katie Bishop, Emily Botine, James Ramsey, Caitlin Pierce, Zachary Mack, and Bill Moss. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death, Sex, Money. And if you like the show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. It helps more people see us in the iTunes podcast charts. If you're new to the show, check out all of our episodes at deathsexmoney.org, including our very first episode with a music legend who's also a fan of a certain TV courtroom.
You know, the other person who loves Judge Judy that I've talked to for the show is Bill Withers.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
I love Bill Withers.
That's his thing.
I did background for him for some show. I was just like, I couldn't believe that I was breathing his air, the same air he was breathing. He was just so beautiful and so natural. I love him.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to check out the WNYC podcast On the Media. Host Brooke Gladstone tells it like it is. She's one of my heroes. Look for On the Media wherever you get your podcast or listen on the WNYC app.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.